Welcome to the TaxCast from the Tax Justice Network. 15 to 20 minutes of global news and analysis on tax havens and corruption you won't hear anywhere else. With me, Naomi Fowler. The TaxCast is available to everyone for download and broadcast on www.tackletaxhavens.com. Here's a quick roundup of tax justice events this month. At the G8 summit, the most powerful countries have discussed tax and transparency in a luxury golf resort in Northern Ireland. But have they taken away anything more than an extra inch on their waistlines after all those posh conference dinners? We'll be analysing what's really been achieved later with the Tax Justice Network's John Christensen. What does your favourite retailer score on their transparency levels, tax paid, and their use of tax havens? This month, the Fair Tax Mark was launched. You can take a look at the first 25 UK registered companies they've scored so far and the methodology they used on www.fairtaxmark.net. Fair Tax researcher Misha Nehru.
It's a question of downloading and reading through what are often quite lengthy reports. Very glossy, lots of nice pictures of all the board members. And then towards the back of those reports, you get the actual numbers, the figures that count. This is about saying that there are certain standards of behaviour within tax and transparency in tax accounting that we believe companies should adhere to if they are going to be seen to be contributing their fair share of tax in the countries where they operate.
On this month's Roll of Dishonour, one of the big four accountancy firms, Deloitte, has been fined $10 million and banned from any new consulting work for financial firms in New York State for 1 year. Deloitte got into trouble over its work for the Standard Chartered Bank on anti-money laundering issues and violating New York banking law. Several dishonourable mentions must go to Switzerland, Austria and Luxembourg for doing everything they can to hold back the European Parliament's efforts towards greater financial transparency, and top place has to go to the IMF. This month, they launched the new Africa Training Institute in the tax haven of Mauritius, a new chapter in sub-Saharan Africa capacity building, according to them. The IMF says the Africa Training Institute's key objective is to contribute to improved macroeconomic and financial policies through high-quality training, which would ultimately support sustainable economic growth and poverty reduction in sub-Saharan Africa. It all sounds great, except that Mauritius has been busily sucking out tax revenue from Africa for years. The Mauritius government kindly sponsored the event. You really couldn't make it up. And that's our TaxCast News Roundup. Now we're going to talk to the head of the Tax Justice Network, John Christensen, for his take on the month's events. Right, John, we're going to talk about the G8 summit. We've had lots of hype, lots of hot air, some really excellent campaigning. The G8 countries have agreed they should make multinational corporations report the profits and taxes they pay on a country-by-country basis. There's the word should. There's no timescale for implementation, but it has been officially endorsed.
We've seen this before in so many areas where high-level groupings either commit themselves to extremely weak things, or half commit themselves, and these words should all too often turn into won't or don't. But the very fact that G8 is talking about country-by-country reporting, even if some of the countries within the G8, including Britain, of course, are talking about it as a voluntary measure rather than a mandatory measure, is to be welcomed, because this means that country-by-country reporting has now moved up to that level, a very high political level, where it's accepted as an important transparency tool. We now must push even harder than before to ensure that this doesn't become a voluntary measure.
Right, and let's move on to the idea that tax authorities should automatically share information to fight tax evasion. They've agreed to agree that tax authorities should automatically share information. There's that should word again. This is probably the best outcome of the G8, perhaps, even though there's, again, no timescale for implementation.
Whilst it's great that the world's most powerful countries, the OECD countries, are now committing themselves to automatic information exchange, all the rest of the world seems to be absent from this process. And that's a cause for concern, because whilst, of course, countries like United Kingdom, United States and the major European nations do need to tackle their own domestic tax evasion problem, and that means adopting automatic information exchange. This is very much more pressing for the countries outside the OECD area. And sadly, at this stage, they're being excluded, or rather, they're not being explicitly included. I had hoped there would be a much greater commitment to making this a multilateral standard available across the entire world. And at this stage, there's not much evidence that that's going to be put into practice.
Right, and Prime Minister Cameron made quite a big deal out of getting the Crown dependencies to sign up to an agreement to share information just before the G8 summit began. But I think it's probably important to say that's not automatic information exchange that they're agreeing to, is it?
Well, first of all, he's accepted that Britain has a major role to play in this and needs to tidy up its own backyard. But yet again, the standards being set are too low. Many of them have already signed up to a lot of by-request information exchange agreements. These are very weak agreements, and everyone accepts that they're weak agreements. Automatic information exchange won't work if places like Cayman, Channel Islands, and other major tax havens don't, first of all, obtain the information about who's hiding behind their offshore trusts and who's hiding behind their offshore companies, and more importantly, don't share that information automatically. So we'll need to look very, very carefully at the nature of any agreements that emerge from this process, because if they don't extend to cover, above all, offshore trusts and offshore foundations, then a huge loophole has been left in the process, which allows these places to actually go out there and market themselves as even more secretive because they appear to have signed up to automatic information exchange, but it doesn't cover the people hiding behind trusts.
Right, OK. And on to the idea of public registries. The communique from the G8 does recognise that tax collectors and law enforcers should be able to get the information on the real owners of companies easily, but no actual commitment to making those registries public, which of course would help developing countries a lot. And so that means there's no commitment to opening that up to journalists and civil society. The UK Action Plan has committed to a registry, but they're going to consult on making the information public. But it seems like the UK and the United States are hopelessly compromised on all this, though, because they've got places in the states like Delaware and Nevada who may not even be collecting and recording some of this information. And I believe in the UK, foreign companies, including the ones registered in some of these tax havens, can be directors of companies registered in the UK. Shares in UK companies can be held by nominees who might not be resident in the UK. So if the United Kingdom and the United States aren't going to lead on this, it makes me wonder why places like the Cayman Islands, Bermuda, British Virgin Islands, Gibraltar, Montserrat, all of these places, Jersey, why they would sign up for it too.
Let me first of all say how disappointing it is that countries like Russia, Japan and Germany, they're clearly not interested in signing up to this process, even refusing the idea of public registries, and that's a setback, I think. What's clear is that President Obama has said that he will be pushing for registers of beneficial ownership at state level. But I think we can anticipate that states like Nevada, Wyoming and, of course, Delaware will push back very heavily against this. In the case of the United Kingdom, well, we already know that the United Kingdom's registry up till now has been extremely weak, very poor on collecting information, and of course also allows a lot of people to hide their ownership behind bearer shares, which are not covered by the agreement at this stage. But more importantly, unless this agreement is extended to cover all of the British overseas territories, which is where the City of London likes to hide its more dirty activities, unless it covers the Channel Islands, the British Virgin Islands, the Cayman Islands and others, then there'll still be bolt holes available to people who are wanting to use the British tax havens to hide their identity. So everything now depends on the extent to which the Prime Minister in Britain is prepared to push for disclosure on public record right the way across the British tax haven empire. Most people who use British tax havens will be advised to use either a trust or a foundation. These are particularly secretive, especially so in the case of trusts known as discretionary trusts. Here we need to see much more work done to ensure that the trustees are required to share information about every single disbursement of either income or capital to whoever it is around the world. Because if this doesn't happen, then what we're going to find is that G8 has actually put British tax havens, which use trusts extensively, into a competitive advantage where they can start marketing trusts right the way across the world, saying trusts aren't required to disclose information about the people who benefit from them.
What happens now? Because we've got all the countries are presenting their own action plans, and I will try not to laugh at the name action plan. I think that all eyes are now turning to next G20 summit. So it seems like what we've ended up with is that they've all agreed to continue to talk.
Yes, they've all agreed to continue to talk, and the upcoming G20 summit this autumn will see more detail. I mean, I hope especially around automatic information exchange. We can't have too high a hope of the G20 in this area. But I think what we can now see realistically is programmes by civil society to put pressure on their national governments like Germany, United Kingdom, United States to move forward with proper action plans to remove the shalls and the shoulds and put into places wills. But I also think that we now need to start seeing more pressure, particularly developing countries, so they start making demands to be included in this process. We've already seen voices from Africa saying they want automatic information exchange, they want full disclosure of company accounting information. We need to add more voices to that process, so the pressure is built up on G8 to take much stronger action than they've committed to so far.
John, Director of the Tax Justice Network, John Christensen. And now it's time for the TaxCast special feature, to treaty or not to treaty? That is the question. On the one hand, the world's most powerful leaders hold summit after summit, insisting they need global agreement for reform and then never achieve it. On the other hand, some countries are coming up with their own creative alternatives to stop the leeching of their tax revenues. Mongolia's taken the unprecedented step of cancelling a treaty with the Netherlands. Mongolia's also cancelled agreements with Luxembourg, Kuwait and the United Arab Emirates. Argentina's done some cancellations of its own, and other countries are deciding not to sign treaties in the first place. This month, the TaxCast looks at the alternatives to the status quo. This is the Speaker of the Mongolian Parliament, Mr. Inkbold. He's been pretty clear on why Mongolia has taken such unusual action in cancelling a tax treaty agreement with the Netherlands. He says, we need to close this loophole in the world economy. Tax must be paid where the real business is located. Tax justice economist Richard Murphy.
It's quite unusual for any country to cancel a double tax agreement. First of all, because diplomatically these things aren't done. It's like announcing that you're divorcing somebody without actually telling them in advance. Now, Mongolia has done this because it believes it's being abused.
That's because back in 2002, the Mongolian government unfortunately signed a double taxation agreement with the Netherlands. That agreement gave away the right to Dutch companies investing in Mongolia to pay dividends back to the Netherlands, free of any Mongolian tax. Richard Murphy.
The locations with which it has cancelled its double tax agreements are all the usual conduits used for foreign direct investment. So, what Mongolia fears is that because of the nature of its double tax agreements with the Netherlands and Luxembourg and the UAE and so on, which are being used by multinational companies to locate investments into Mongolia, Mongolia is losing out on tax revenue because those double tax agreements have provided a mechanism for profits to be extracted with no withholding taxes, with royalties to be paid probably with very low or no withholding taxes. And therefore, if transfer pricing and other forms of abuse are taking place between the multinational company and the subsidiary in Mongolia, Mongolia is frankly seeing no benefit from that foreign direct investment. It's being basically used and feels abused as a result, and is saying, well, if that happens because of the nature of the double tax agreement we've got, we're not putting up with this any longer. And they'll take the risk at the moment of saying, we don't want your investment if the consequence of your investment is we don't get a benefit. And one of the benefits they're measuring is tax paid in Mongolia, and they're not getting it. And so they're saying, blow it, we'll pull out.
Mongolian tax negotiators could have done with listening to economist Lee Shepherd before getting taken to the cleaners by the Netherlands. Here she is advising an international audience on tax agreements. many of which are based on OECD model treaties.
People you don't want to sign treaties with are the international enablers. The Netherlands, Switzerland, Bermuda, Ireland. These are members of European organizations in good standing. They are low-tax jurisdictions, they have real tax systems, they tax their own people, but they also basically do a full-on business as conduits of money out of the market countries. That is all of your countries. Don't sign OECD model treaties. The OECD protects the interests of the United States and the United Kingdom. Don't sign UN model treaties. As far as these multinationals and their advisors are concerned, there are only countries from which there is extraction and countries where there are customers, and these are all countries from which income has got to be stripped. And the rubric that allows this is the international consensus. That's what it's called. It is the whole treaty network. The treaties, that's all they were ever for, was to make life comfortable for multinationals. That's what tax treaties are for.
Now, in theory, a double taxation agreement between countries seems like a good idea. It's supposed to stop multinational income being taxed twice, once by the country hosting foreign investment and once by the country that's the source of those investment dollars. But the result is often double non-taxation, to the great disadvantage of the host country, like resource-rich Mongolia, keen to attract investment. So here's how it works. The Netherlands sets itself up as a low-tax jurisdiction and, obviously, attracts multinational companies. The allocation of taxing rights is supposed to be decided fairly between countries, but guess what? The country that's the source of the investment dollars tends to have the upper hand. A low tax haven like the Netherlands is there to defend the interests of its clients, multinational companies, in shifting their money out of, say, Mongolia, and depriving them of tax revenues. So, the Netherlands' low-tax business model's working off the back of less developed nations. Nice. Tanzanian opposition member and shadow finance minister Zito Zuberikabwe.
The problem is most of the less developed countries, most of them don't really understand when they sign. So it's ignorance. It's ignorance that makes us sign these treaties. So the countries are taking advantage. Developed countries take advantage of the less developed countries. Now, some of us in less developing countries are starting to understand the implications of all these things.
And it's not only countries like Tanzania that are losing out. Here's economist Jim Henry giving a TED talk.
There's a global haven industry that is specialized in making these practices possible. 80 of the top 100 multinational companies in the world actually use the Netherlands as a kind of pass-through vehicle for reducing their taxation substantially, to the point where Apple basically ended up earning just about $100 billion tax-free profits in the last 3 years by virtue of these games. Zambia. In the case of Zambia, we have copper exports channeled through Swiss companies. They're parking all of the exports in low-tax havens. So Zambia shows positive exports, on the average about $10 billion a year, through Switzerland. But Switzerland shows no imports from Zambia. If Zambia got the same price for its copper that the Swiss do, who are selling it for them, Zambia's GDP would increase by at least 25%.
And like Mongolia, Zambia's taken its own action to try to address this. They've passed a new law to try to force mining companies to bring export sale dollars back to Zambia. Mexico passed its own special law to try to curb transfer pricing abuses. Brazil insists companies doing business there follow its own system. It turns out there's lots of action countries can take unilaterally. Here's Lee Shepherd again on just some of the ways there actually are for countries to work around harmful tax treaties.
You want to enact specific defensive laws to address the problems that you know you have. If you have problems with, you know, pricing of minerals going out of the country, or you have problems with ships being towed out into the ocean and sold, you know, I mean, I can write you a two-sentence statute That's not a hard statute to draft. You know, you can draft protective stuff and get it in your law, and they can't argue with it. Because right now, in some of these situations, the treaties are protecting them, and the countries that are harmed are not protecting themselves in their own laws. And speaking of protecting yourselves, for those of you who are from mineral exporting countries, for heaven's sakes, the agreements that you sign. This is the point of maximum leverage over the multinational companies that are extracting the minerals. They want the minerals, you have them, you can put the conditions in the agreements, you can put tax conditions in the agreements. South America does not sign OECD model treaties because a treaty is a contract. They read the document. They don't like the terms. Brazil is a huge country. The United States does a lot of business with Brazil. The United States has no tax treaty with Brazil. A lot of the orange juice in the United States, it goes right into a boat that looks like one of those oil tankers, and it goes right up to the port in New Jersey. You can do business with a country without a tax treaty. As a country, you don't need one. What do you do if you've got treaties with the enablers? Well, you want switchover clauses. Norway signed a treaty with Ireland in the year 2000. It's clear what Ireland does. Ireland is one of the enablers. The enablers, they will defend the multinational's position in the treaty negotiation between the two affected countries. They will defend it. That's part of the services they sell. There's nothing for them to defend if you have a switchover clause. The Norway-Ireland treaty does not have a switchover clause. Now, here's what that means. Well, if the income has been shifted to Ireland and Ireland doesn't tax it, guess what? Ain't nobody taxes it. A switchover clause says that if the other party of the treaty doesn't tax the income, then the first party, that would be Norway in this case, gets to tax it.
It's a matter of time before more countries follow Mongolia's lead and start doing some cancelling, renegotiation and legislating of their own, if Dutch and other taxation agreements aren't revised to stop treaty abuse and related revenue losses. This fragmentation of the international tax system isn't surprising when so many countries aren't members of the international consensus Lee Shepherd mentioned earlier. And multinational corporations? Well, they're quite happy to see so many divisions opening up. It means they can continue their favourite sport of playing one country off against another. So, the best way forward for countries who want real reform for all? Richard Murphy.
I suggest to them stand up together, demand a new form of double tax agreement, reject these abusive ones from countries like the Netherlands, and in that case, you will actually achieve reform. It's rather like countries going on strike. Very bizarre. We've never seen it before, but it could just work.
You've been listening to The Taxcast from the Tax Justice Network. For more Taxcasts, you can now find us on iTunes or go to www.tackletaxhavens.com.